You are more beautiful than you need to be. You are more beautiful than you need to be. Standing there, your eyes wet with wonder and naivety. And what's that you hold in your open hands? Arms bent, elbows by your side, shoulders back a little down, feet together, neck long, wayward strands of hair resting on your cheeks. What is it you hold so tenderly, expectedly, patiently, maybe not so patiently? Your breath is short, I can tell. These days, you don't cry so easily. Are you here alone? With memories. And when you sleep, your dreams are full of faces. And when you wake, your face is full of emptiness. And what is that you hold? Let me see. Show me. Trust me. You are more beautiful than you need to be. Standing there, wanting to be met by tenderness, the touch of lover's soft caress, your aching sense of loneliness. Is that it? You want to be in love? You've been in love. Left the aftertaste upon your lips, alone with none but the other from which to part and whisper nothing but mumbled sentences left unsaid, unheard. Is that your heart you carry now? Again, going no place, unguided. Now here you are, standing there, so beautiful, so lost in love. So lost is love, so how can I help you? There is no cure for disbelief, no answers as to why or when. These things we cannot know, but trust me when I say this, you are more beautiful than you need to be. Standing there, a smile somewhere, deep down, your heart so full, your mind an open flower, child of dirt and sun and ocean swims, your tender belly dancing feet to music made for dancing. Someday these days will have their place in a story like no other, a story you cannot imagine. And why should you dare to be surprised by what lies before you? Dare to be surprised by what lies before you. Beauty, love, possibility. Trust me, please. Do not give in to misery. Promise me you won't give up your dreaming, waiting patiently, your caring so damn painfully. Do not be jaded by uncertainty, for doubt leaves every door unlocked, and time will do the walking for you day by day. Line by line, the words will write themselves. Only you must stay more beautiful than you need to be, standing there alive, alone, a light in a dark room, a tear rolling down your cheek, a torrent if you stop to think of every drop you'll ever weep for those you leave behind in search of poetry more beautiful than it needs to be. Standing there, with only me for company, today at least, perhaps, maybe. Everything is meant to be the way it is supposed to be, and you are living perfectly in harmony with music made for dancing. Every note in time and place, played by everyone with no mistake, so take your seat with bow in hand and play your heart as loud as you can, for I'm listening to you. Every note, I'm listening to you. I hear you, I feel you. Hold you close, then let you go to walk a little further. A little further than you walked before. I have not left you. I will not leave you. I am here. Standing there, more beautiful than I need to be. Well, hello to anyone listening to this, and welcome to episode 3. That poem was called More Beautiful, and I think it is quite beautiful, actually, and you can read it again if you like. It's on my website, More Beautiful. That really felt good starting that way. So, episode 3. As you can tell, it's still only my voice. Almost had an interview, didn't quite drop, but there's always next weekend, and feeling good about that, so we'll see how we go. But still some cool people lined up to talk. In the meantime, it will continue to be me, and I've got some things to say today, so that works out well. Kind of set the trend with that poem. It's going to hopefully be the thread of theme that runs through some of the things that are bubbling to the surface of my conscious experience and asking to be let into this microphone. Firstly, for anyone who has been listening to the last couple of episodes, I had my bar mitzvah this week, and, well, I can report and say it was really wonderful and well attended by people who are really special to me, and, yeah, not really sure what more to say. The process of bringing that all together and vocalizing, articulating, and then embodying and ritualizing that for me has just been really profound and has changed a lot in many ways, a lot in the way that I'm sort of thinking and feeling. And I'm still letting that be what it is and allowing the ripples of those few weeks to continue to search through my life and touch all the parts of it. And I'm waiting patiently for that, which feels like the right thing to do. But generally, a wonderful experience. And if you're not sure what I'm talking about at all, it would be worth checking out the last episode because I sort of explained it there and I don't want to go too much more into it because today is today. And I do want to talk about something, but what I thought I would do before I do that is I read the poem More Beautiful, and I'm going to just read another story. And in the congruence of those two readings, I think will be birthed the idea that I feel called to express. So the story that I'm going to read is called The Feeling Forest. And this story is a story very dear to me because it was one of the first stories that ever came to me. And, well, that's just something because it really started a journey into storytelling. And it still has a potency about it that I think is a ripple in itself. At least it seems to be every time I tell it in the presence of young people and old people too. So without talking it up too much, of course, let's just get to it and you can be the judge. So this story is called The Feeling Forest. Once there were two brothers, Daniel and Jordan. One day they were drawing pretend treasure maps. All of a sudden, Jordan spilled a glass of water onto Daniel's map. Daniel became angry. He shouted at Jordan. His face was scrunched up and his fists were clenched. The noise brought the brother's mother into the room. She noticed Daniel was angry and suggested he take a walk to give his mind time to settle. And so he did. Nearby the house was a long and winding path. Daniel began walking along the path. He walked angrily, thinking all the while of his ruined map. Soon he was further along the path than he had ever been before. He turned to see his house in the distance. And upon turning back to the path, Daniel noticed a peacock sitting silently beneath a nearby tree. He approached the peacock and was surprised to see that its eyes were closed. Daniel spoke to the peacock and the peacock opened its eyes. "What are you doing?" said Daniel. "I've been walking in the Feeling Forest," said the peacock. "The Feeling Forest?" asked Daniel, puzzled. "Oh yes," said the peacock. "The Feeling Forest is just a little further along the path. A little further and you are bound to find it. And when you do, you will find Mixies in the trees. Now a Mixie is a very small but very powerful thing that lives in trees. It comes in all different shapes and colours and all different feelings too. There is a happy Mixie, a sad Mixie, a scared Mixie, a hurt Mixie. In fact, there is a Mixie for every feeling you can imagine. And when they land on boys or girls, the boys or girls feel the same feeling as the Mixie. Daniel was curious. He walked toward the feeling forest. At the edge of the forest, he took 3 deep breaths. The peacock had told him to. Then he walked in. Soon he felt a tingle on his neck. His fists clenched and his face scrunched up. His thoughts became angry. After a while, the tingle went away, and Daniel's face and fists returned to normal. I wonder if that was an angry Mixie that landed on my neck, he thought. After a few more steps, Daniel tripped on a tree root and fell to the ground. He scraped his knee and it was bleeding and very painful. Daniel began to cry. He looked at his knee and could feel sharp pain at the sight of the scrape. After a while, his tears dried up and the pain went away. I wonder if that was a hurt Mixie, thought Daniel. He wasn't sure, so he decided to return to ask the peacock. When he arrived at the tree, the peacock wasn't there. In its place was a note. It was pinned to the tree by a peacock feather. Daniel held the note and read aloud. It said, "Many a Mixie will land on your shoulder, but not one Mixie will stay. Angry or scared, happy or hurt, all Mixies must pass away. You don't have to hide them or tell them to leave. It's not up to you, you see. You just wait, breathe, be patient, and after a while, Mixies return to their trees." Daniel put the note in his pocket and walked home. When he arrived, Jordan was still sitting by the treasure maps. He saw Daniel and felt scared. Daniel noticed. He walked up to Jordan and took the note from his pocket. With one hand on Jordan's shoulder, he read aloud. "Many a Mixie will land on your shoulder, but not one Mixie will stay. Angry or scared, happy or hurt, all Mixies must pass away. You don't have to hide them or tell them to leave. It's not up to you, you see. Just wait, breathe. Be patient, and after a while, Mixies return to their trees." And so it was. So, that is the story of the Feeling Forest and Mixies. And every time I tell that story to children, it really works to create an image around what is such an ephemeral and difficult to pin down concept of emotions and the way we feel. And children really simplify their emotions into just a few categories most of the time. But if they are invited to, I'd like to say personify, if they're invited to personify their emotions, they tend to be able to collect together a much broader cross-section. And I think that that's important, because the more we can name in our experience, the more territory we've charted and the less we're taken by surprise by our own selves, which is a process that I don't think ever ends, but the more we are not surprised by, the bigger we are in some sense, the more territory of ourselves we've navigated and the more space we have to inhabit. As soon as we sort of restrict ourselves to a very narrow concept of what we can and can't feel, can and can't say, can and can't think, we tend to be quite stuck there. And anything that tries to get out that isn't in that concept tends to cause a bit of angst and tension. Anyway, that's going on a bit of a tangent. But yeah, the story itself, I think, is quite powerful. I've put a link on the website at the end of the story to a little workshop that you can do if you are in the world of children or you feel to be, whereby After telling this story, normally what I do is I will say to the children something like, "So, what mixies have you experienced or seen or felt or heard, or what mixies do you know of?" And you get a bunch of them calling out different sorts of emotions. And then from there, you can go into articulating that in image form. So I would hand out a bunch of different cards or something like that. And so draw one of the mixies that you are familiar with. And they draw mixies. And I once did this in a group of 60 kids. So ended up having 60 of these little mixie cards. Each one was a sort of different emotion. There were lots of double ups, but it was quite phenomenal having all of these mixies on cards. And then once you've got that, oh, the possibilities are really broad. You can play different games with the cards, so you can deal them out in sort of theater sport fashion and have the kids act out different feelings, or you can use them as guessing games. What feeling is this? And you know, you can play some kind of charades or Pictionary or... Anyway, it's a really powerful starter, that story, to a few different things. I mean, you can also make mixies out of clay and all that kind of stuff. But where did I want to go with that? Well, I guess where I went, but also to this idea that I've been thinking about, which is to say that it seems to be the way things go, that we have often certain desires for things to be a certain way. And I don't just mean about the present, I mean mainly about the future. So wanting certain things, and this is in some ways, I think, the way we go about life. We sort of go from thing to thing. I'm doing this, and now I want to do this, and now I want to do this, and that's what I do. But what is it that drives that force? What is it that determines what it is I want to do? Because I sort of have to create an image of that. I have to visualize what I want to do. I have to visualize satisfying my desire in a material way in the world. And that's like goal setting, I suppose, or something like that. And in the really short term, it's just basically deciding what to do. Next. So how this fits into mixies and the nature of emotions as being temporary is that being a collection of many different, I guess, beings, you know, really are. We really are. We're a sort of what Jordan Peterson would call an emergent property. We're more than the mere collection of beings that we actually are. You can imagine a puzzle is a collection of puzzle pieces. Each one is not really anything, and only together they are more than what they are individually. So if we're a sort of emergent property of a number of different puzzle pieces, and each one of those puzzle pieces is different and it sort of wants different things, so depending on what puzzle pieces are present at a given time will really depend on what the picture looks like and also what the picture wants to look like. So if there are certain desires in me that are causing me to want certain things in the material world, but those desires are temporary, they're only guests, well, how do I know? And is that important? Well, I think it is important, because if those guests are just temporary visitors to this being, then I don't really want to expend a lot of energy in pursuing desires that I'm not going to want for very long, especially if pursuing those desires involves bringing other people into the fray, because that is where I think things get really messy. I think one really clear example of this is we often will talk about relationships and love and say things like, you know, people who are out there really seeking relationship oftentimes might be seeking to fill a certain gap in self-love or in relation to self. So if I don't have a good relationship with myself, I can find someone who does have a good relationship with me, and that can sort of fill in that gap. And that can be problematic because it's not really a good fit, because people come and go and they change. And if my sense of self-love is dependent upon another person, well, that's a recipe for some pretty turbulent times. So that's an idea that I think everyone is sort of familiar with to some extent. So let's apply that then to this idea of desires. So if a desire of mine is not really for, let's take one step back. In the person who is having a desire for a romantic relationship to fill a gap in their self-love, that person is really what we might say projecting a desire onto the world, needing it to be met by the outside world, when in actual fact what they really want is for that desire to be met internally. So the same might be true of certain desires, especially ephemeral ones. I might want the world to be a certain way, but what I really want is for my inner experience of life to be a certain way. And if I go about trying to manipulate the world, I'm sort of acting out some kind of inner desire. And that might be problematic because, well, for a number of reasons, particularly when fulfilling desires involves other people. And I can give a really great example of this. Let's say that you want to build a house. And so you have this desire to build a house, and so you go about borrowing a bunch of money for a mortgage. And in order to borrow the money for the mortgage, you have to use a guarantor, and so you use a friend. And this friend is now the guarantor for your mortgage, and so you borrow all this money and you start building the house. Now, once you've built the house, you are there, and you realize very soon that your desire somehow is not really satisfied. And on further introspection, you come to realize that, hey, what is a house to you? Well, actually, what you were really seeking was some kind of safety and stability and protection that you weren't really feeling in an internal way. You were feeling quite vulnerable and unprotected and unsheltered. And shelter is really one of the primary desires of our biology. So it follows that in not feeling satisfied internally, you wanted a house. So now you've got the house, but you recognize that, hey, all I needed was a bit of an internal shift. And now I realize as well that actually the place where I built the house is not really where I want to live. And in fact, I, you know, just got this opportunity to go somewhere else, and now I've got this house and this mortgage, and I don't really know what to do with it. And not only that, but if I don't stay here and if I can't figure this out, well, I've got my friend roped in who's the guarantor on the house, and so, oh, you know, it's just a big mess because I acted in the material world on a feeling that was primarily to do with finding some kind of inner balance or inner resolution. Okay, why am I saying this? Because I think I have stumbled clumsily, and thankfully, on a way, at least within my own experience of this set of experiences, a way of determining when certain desires are goals for material existence, and when those desires might be just projections of some kind of inner need for resolution. And for me, at least, the difference is in a sense of urgency. That's like the primary feature of desires which are internal. It's like, if I feel like I need to urgently satisfy a desire, if I feel like very impulsive toward achieving something externally, I think that is normally a sign, at least it has been that way for me, of the desire being an internal one rather than some kind of goal or dream for the way the world might organize itself, given some work that I can do in creating it. So, I guess where I want to find closure in this idea is to say we need to be careful. I need to be careful with how I go about fulfilling my desires and aware that some of those desires, and many of those desires, are really just inner needs for resolution, and that I can work out which ones aren't, which ones are really things that I want to work towards in the material world by just being a little bit patient and waiting to see if perhaps it's just a mixie asking for something rather than a call to an eventuality that is going to really influence lots of people other than myself. Because if I just satisfy my inner desires, I don't have to bring anyone else into that really. And that's inner work, and it's good in and of itself, and it's going to make me a better person. And I'll be more prepared to really tackle goals that do influence and involve other people. So, urgency. And I guess this comes back to, you know, the wisdom of sayings like patience is a virtue. And perhaps this is not news to anyone out there, but, you know, it was news to me. So I think it's worth sharing. Patience seems to definitely be a virtue in so much as it has the potential to reduce dead ends and reduce harm. Because one thing Jordan Peterson says, which is, I think, quite profound, is he says that people respond to tragedy generally quite well. We sort of all seem to be on the same page in knowing that life is not all roses and rainbows, that tragedy does happen, and oftentimes people are galvanized, certainly communities are, even within ourselves, we can really overcome tragedy and be and flourish as a result of tragedy somehow. You know, it's often the making of people is when things don't go according to plan. Except, he says, in one very important case, and that is where the tragedy is the result of malevolence or being hurt by people. When people are hurt by other people, he says in the research, they generally tend to recover or not recover, but if they do recover, it's far slower and maybe never to any kind of the same extent, or certainly it's not necessarily a catalyst for flourishing. So somehow when it's people that hurt us, we take that differently. And that might be because some kind of empathy, or because we are people and we sort of see our own potential for hurting others in that. I'm not sure exactly what it is. It probably doesn't need to be gone into, but just to say hurting people, and maybe it's not clear what is the connection between acting out of urgency and hurting people. But I think for me the link is that as soon as we speak our desires, that is a powerful act. it's a powerful act to articulate something, because it becomes an idea, and ideas take on lives of their own. Now, I'm not saying we should never articulate ideas. I think it's just to be aware that moving too quickly towards the fulfillment of desires doesn't leave space for surprise. It doesn't leave space for the inevitability of those desires not being met exactly how you think they're going to be met. And it also doesn't leave much space for the realization that actually it was all just something on the inside. And that's the biggest one, because if it turns out to be just something on the inside and you've now set about changing the world, well, sometimes if you've gone down that path quite a long way, it can be very difficult to get out of that. And definitely relationship is the best example of that again, because people can satisfy a need for self-love in relationships that last a really long time. And when they don't work out, sometimes it's too late to get out of them. So I don't really know how much sense that made. I'm hoping enough, and we will see. The other thing that I wanted to mention in this episode, to sort of get off my chest and into the world, is another idea that I have come across in Peterson's work. And this relates a little bit back to the bar mitzvah thing, because in reconnecting with Judaism as a cultural narrative, as a set of mythological stories that have, you know, profound wisdom encoded within them and a sort of inexhaustible well of knowledge that lies there, and connecting with a sort of ancestral line and with myth as the inheritance of our culture and that as an ongoing process. I've been connecting with Judaism. I mean, put it simply, I've just been reading Jewish texts, I've been listening to rabbis, I've been watching lots of YouTube videos. And one thing has been quite clear to me is that a lot of the time, it doesn't really matter. If you're interested in the Bible, it doesn't really matter if you go towards a rabbi or a priest. If they're talking about psychology as being one of the key fields of understanding that the Bible can guide us towards, then they're all on the same page, really. And also, their stories are so overlapping. I mean, so many of the Old Testament is within the New Testament. So really, if you find a good priest, you can be a good Jew. And why is that? Well, I think because there's something really interesting that Jordan Peterson talks about. And I mean, it's not his idea, and he'll be the first to say that, but it's really interesting. And this is the idea. It sort of says that the Old Testament faith and the mythology pre-Christianity, at least in the West, was predicated on the idea that the salvation of the individual was through the state. That if we built a good state, then everyone could be taken care of and everyone could be happy. And we just needed to find out what the ideal state was, build it, and then it would work. And that's been a real story, and it still is a story for a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people will say, you know, we need this system of government, we need this system of social organization, we need to localize in small communities, we need to be more sharing, we need more socialist ideals, we need whatever it is, we need less militaries, whatever it is. It's like, if we just organize our states better, we'll be better. So that's one idea. And I think that that in the Old Testament is like this Israel idea in some way. It's like, go towards the land of Israel, build a homeland. It's very much this language of create a state, and that is being carried out literally today. So many Jewish people are tied up with Zionism and this idea that like salvation comes in supporting and building some kind of Jewish homeland. I'm not going to go into that, but I do want to go beyond that to say we have seen time and time again in history that civilizations rise and fall and that no civilization is perfect. And whenever we think we have a perfect system of government, it turns out to be basically the opposite. So it seems to everyone now that the state is not our salvation. We're not going to solve all our problems with the right form of government. It's just not going to happen. And that is, at least this is what Jordan Peterson says, that is the wisdom of Christianity as it relates to Judaism. In Judaism, it was build the best state. And in Christianity, it is build the best person. It is the person that is the salvation. What does that mean? Well, it means, in simple terms, do your own work. It's like, be the change you want to see in the world. All these kinds of ideas. It starts with you. It starts with me. It starts with recognizing that our desires might be internal manifestations of unresolved internal things and not try and change the world to make it a way that is really just the way we want our insides to be. Because it might be the case that there are things inside us that we don't like. And if there are, we are really well adapted to pretending that those things are outside of us and therefore trying to kill those things outside of ourselves, when really what we can't accept is that part of us is dirty or messy or arrogant or ugly or mean. You know, we have it all in us. We're all capable of lots of different things and we act that out in ways that can be very harmful. But if we start at the center, if we start with ourselves, if we recognize that salvation is in the individual, that there is a Christ within us, then, well, if you talk about starting locally, that's about as local as you can get. And I remember when I was at a Vipassana meditation retreat, I was sort of nearing the end of my time and I was ready to go. I just wanted to get out of there. I thought I'd done all the work that I had to do. I was probably feeling a bit arrogant. And I went up to the teacher and I asked to leave. And I sort of said, you know, there's no point in me being here for another 3 days locked away from the whole of civilization, not talking to anyone, not seeing my family, not seeing my friends. What's the point? I feel good. I've spent 7 days. I spent, you know, 70 hours meditating now. I think I've done enough. I can go home. And the teacher said to me, the 3 more days that you spend here working on yourself will be the best way to serve your family and friends. Because, he said, it's like becoming a light in a dark room. We need to become lights in dark rooms. And that's only our responsibility individually. We can only do that for ourselves and thereby do it for others. The question is how? You know, that seems to be the question. And the answer is, it's not that hard. Start with some form of therapy. Some form of therapy. And that doesn't necessarily have to be seeing a therapist. I mean, it might be something like a meditation course, or it might even be something like yoga, or just any kind of self-development, you know. Just there are so many things that we know would make us better people if we just did them. And that might even be like cleaning your room or calling your mum and telling her you love her. It's so easy to be a better person. There's like infinite possibilities for that in every moment. So If we start there and we just become better people individually, that's salvation. That's salvation. And that's this really cool progression from old ways of thinking, which still are relevant because we can still read those texts as being relevant to individual salvation. And I think that's what's so profound about them, is that they evolve into that narrative, because it's not really their only message, I guess, but also because they're written at a deep level. So we can continue to read the Old Testament as if it was some kind of personal allegory and another collection of, you know, parameters and codes of morality. And then we can say, oh, and look at this, how the New Testament kind of says, hey, bring that in and make it all about the individual and liberate the individual in order to realize a better humanity. Oh, okay. That's out there now. So, to summarize, you are more beautiful than you need to be. Your emotions are mixies. Do not worry. Just breathe. Be patient, and after a while, they will return to their trees. If you are feeling a sense of urgency, wait. Be patient. Perhaps there is some kind of inner need for some kind of resolution. Start there. Start with that inner need. Explore that territory. Use the resources you have at your disposal, or ask for help, or start by cleaning your room, because it is not the state that will be our salvation. It is ourselves. All right. Next week, someone else, perhaps. If not, hey, I'm having a good time. See you then.